That's right. So in order for Rodney Reed to really be freed from death row, there needs to be a recommendation from the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles. This is a board that's appointed by the governor, by Governor Greg Abbott. We don't know exactly how they make their decisions, but a decade or two ago, the board members were fairly open that they would not do things that the governor was displeased with. They sort of felt beholden to the governor. This was certainly the case under Governor George Bush in the 90s. You know, his board members admitted this. And
you're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue to cover this issue. The death date is set for November 20th. Marie Shema will link to your piece at the Marshall Project. And folks should go to democracynow.org to see our interview with Rodney's brother and sister-in-law, as well as his lawyer. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for paid six-month internships here in our New York City studio. Go to democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cliff Bells will be hosting a very special WHFR Jazz Benefit on Sunday, November 17th. Please join us for an evening of jazz improvisation starring Dave Hurley and the Outer Nebula Trio featuring Raphael Staton, Bear Trap, Michael Malice's Exploration Ensemble, Planetary Citizenship featuring O'Donnell, Spangler, Bergman, Wallace, and CUNY. Doors open at 7 o'clock, all ages welcome. Minors must be accompanied by an adult. All proceeds from a $10 donation entry fee go directly to WHFR. We hope to see you at Cliff Bell's on Sunday, November 17th for WHFR's Jazz Benefit. Please visit WHFR.fm for more information.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. Featuring local and independent artists.
Hello and welcome to the WHFR Journal on this chilly Friday. I'm Susan McGraw along with Alan Mazurek. Chilly sounds actually pretty good right now.
Yeah,
Alan,
well, it's been chillier, but no, we can't call it warm.
That's right. Well, it's not downright frigid either, so that's a good thing. But
what a crazy week for the middle of November, isn't it?
Yeah, so. No doubt about it. We've already hit some records on snow, and well, it's not
and,
even
and temperature.
Christmas yet.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
We'll see how it goes. But we have opportunities during the course of this next hour to have you feel warm and cozy and get involved in some things going on in our own community, as well as ways literally to serve and assist others on our HFC campus. Mm. So lots of sort of positive giving back kind of discussions for today. And it's coming up on, believe it or not, I hate to say it, but the Thanksgiving holiday. So it's right around the corner. So 'tis the season of giving thanks. And we're going to embrace that on today's show. We thank you for tuning in and hope you'll continue to enjoy what we've got to share today. A little bit later on in our program, we're going to talk with the very sweet Mandy Earle, administrator of the Hawk's Nest food drive. So we're going to talk about their recent food drive and ways that we can get involved in that. But first and foremost, we are joined with the interim executive director of the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center, David Robinson. He's on the live line at this time, and you might know the name David Robinson as recently retired deputy chief of our own Dearborn Police Department, also serving as a board of directors member of the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center for several years, and he is now serving in the interim executive director role of that very, very powerful and important nonprofit organization. So we are very happy to have you on the line, David. We wish you congratulations on this new interim executive director position, and we look forward to getting some really important information about ways people can take advantage of this worthwhile organization, which is literally in our own backyard. So welcome to the Journal Show.
Well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys today.
Certainly. As a member of the board of directors for several years, when you joined originally into this organization, Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center, what was your motivation for getting involved in the organization? What did you know about it that made you take that step into the commitment of becoming a director or a member of the Board of Trustees?
Well, when I originally was invited to be on the board, I had done some previous work with our current board president, Siham Jafer, in regards to her efforts with diversity and inclusion and her conference that she has every year in April. And you know, I was able to be in some of her planning meetings and actually participate as a panelist and a subject matter expert on some things in her delivery, because I believe that that was really important. And then she started telling me about the importance that mediation and the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center plays in people's lives, especially those who may not always have the abilities to secure attorneys or go through litigation processes. And, you know, it's a way to try to be part of things that affect our everyday families here in Wayne County.
Being part of the solution, and literally in this case, a part of that solution, not just figuratively. You have served in many different capacities in different organizations and so on. And I know, you know, one person only has 24 hours a day, just like anybody else. Making this commitment to interim executive director of the organization, how is that changing specifically the role that you're now playing with this organization?
Well, as you said, I just recently had retired from the Dearborn Police Department back in July. And, you know, being an active, it did free up some more of my time to participate in some of the board activities here at the center. And, you know, when asked to, with the former director leaving, they asked if I would step in and be part of moving us forward in the, because there is so much drastic need for the resolution of disputes in our county, and really we're not handcuffed by simple mediation. That's why the name was recently changed within the last 2 years from the Wayne Mediation Center to the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center, because a lot of people think of mediation as a catch-all phrase, but it's really only one of the services that the Dispute Resolution Center actually provides. Now, it can be used as a verb and a noun and all sorts of things, but the mediation process is pretty much a standardized kind of facilitation between two parties having a dispute in order to get themselves in order to communicate and resolve their differences. And that is really a very key component of the mediation. Is we're not passing judgment. We're a neutral party. We do our very best to eliminate the emotion of issues. We try to get down to the core of what the real dispute is about, which sometimes may not be actually what they originally fill out on the forms as the dispute. Sometimes it's something much deeper, or it's something personal, or it's something along those lines. And it's our job to try to facilitate the conversation to where we're really getting at the purpose, and then ultimately, hopefully, we come up with a contract between the two parties to move forward in their life with the disputes being resolved.
And emotion is oftentimes one of those driving forces that leads to conflict. And of course, anytime there is that dispute or that conflict, it's whatever the specific circumstances are, you know, I'm going to sue you, I'm going to take it to the Supreme Court, everything like that. The legal system would be completely overwhelmed with disputes that could be solved other ways, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And the legal systems of today, pretty much everywhere, are almost overwhelmed. And, you know, they do serve a purpose. I believe wholeheartedly that there are times where litigation is absolutely necessary and the court process is absolutely necessary. However, there are a lot of disputes that would much easier and allow more access to people to having a third party involved in trying to go through the process of resolving the issues.
The WCDRC, Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center, is one of the largest of, I understand, 18 community-based nonprofit mediation centers in Michigan. So again, while we are housed, you know, we are seeing you housed right here at the Dearborn Atrium on Mason Street, you keep saying Wayne County, so we have to just frame this, that we are, this particular organization is appealing to all of Wayne County. County. In your estimation, in your perspective, David, do you find different communities using these services more than others? And Dearborn just happens to be kind of where we landed, in theory?
Well, I think that Dearborn is kind of where the very first, over 30 years ago, mediation-type center originated. It was called the Neighborhood Mediation Center. It originated in Dearborn and in the state. And the thing is how this center has evolved. Staying in Dearborn fits perfectly in the Wayne County service area because being in Dearborn, we're very centrally located in order to serve the entire county. You know, when we go all the way out through Western Wayne, all the way to the Gross Points and to the river, we have the ability to serve all those communities because of our location, and it's not a exorbitant drive if we're doing the mediation at our center, or if we're doing it out in a court, or if we're doing it in a school. Having our hub here in Dearborn has suited us well for over 30 years, and I believe it continues to be a very natural midpoint in the county.
So David, and I know that, you know, no two cases are alike, but what are the kinds of disputes that we're talking about? Somebody whose neighbor's dog barks all night,
those are absolutely eligible for us to be able to mediate through. But much of our mediation, we have a large presence down in our Third Circuit Court, especially in the family court, because we mediate divorce cases, court-ordered mediation, and we also do through the family court, we do parenting time and visitation, access and visitation type mediations, trying to, and really I think that that's such an important thing because we know that divorce is very prevalent today, and there are large effects on a family and a family unit to include the children, and for us to be a part of the process that tries to reconcile the dispute to where it's always in the best interest of the children themselves, I think is very, very meaningful, and I take a lot of pride in what our mediators who handle these cases do, because they can be emotional, they can be stressful, and, divorce is usually considered one of the most stressful things that a human being goes through in their lifetime, and we want to be there if we can to try to resolve problems before it turns to a point of crisis. And those are kind of our very serious, but we also have services in the school system, some school systems that we currently work with now, where we do restorative practices to where we deal with students who might be and their parents, and we try to mediate or facilitate through a process to where we try to, it's not always the best thing to suspend a student. It's not always the best answer to expel the student. Now, granted, sometimes those things have to happen, but if we can, on these minor cases, get involved early enough, it is our hope that we're able to work through these processes that are in the best interest of the child and the learning and the environment altogether. And when I talk about schools, I also mean we have programs where we mediate in special ed programs, where there's a course of study that and a course of educating a child who might have a disability or be or test to a point where they're considered special education needs, and we sit there and we work with the parents and we work with the school system to come up with a resolution and a course plan that best serves everybody, especially that student.
It sounds like a wide-ranging scope of activities. What are some of the numbers in terms of numbers of cases that the organization deals with on a weekly or yearly basis?
On a yearly basis, we're over 3,000 cases per year on our average.
Wow,
which is quite a few mediations. I mean that's a lot, but the way I see it forward, there is so much more that can be done, and that's kind of my vision moving forward, and in my discussions with our board of directors, I'd really like to grow our services to a broader community. I mean, I'm going to put out there that I'm going to be interested in working with some of the boards of realtors throughout Wayne County, because we know that there are often many disputes that come when somebody's buying and selling a home. And, you know, before you start to get into the whole cost of litigation and all of that, and we'd like to be able to have the opportunity to be able to mediate some of those cases to where both parties on either end are satisfied at a resolution. There are so many different growth areas just like that, which don't think that doing the regular neighborhood disputes, one neighbor's mad at the other because they shoveled their snow onto their lawn or what have you. We absolutely, and as funny as some of that sounds, those are real issues to real people.
Yeah.
And it's our ability and it's our opportunity to try to resolve those to where both people will be happy. And you know, because quite honestly, sometimes neighbor troubles can be very tricky because you live next to the people. And in order to try, believe me, in my years as a police officer with the city of Dearborn, we dealt with those type of issues. And unless they committed an actual crime, there was oftentimes we could offer no assistance. And from a police department, other than try to mediate a resolution between parties. Now, what we do as a mediation center now is it's a little more formal of a process where people can come in and be able to sit down and we are able to work through whatever the resolution is. So I kind of look at it as mediation is kind of will work in any industry, will work in any area where there's a dispute. And we have so much opportunity, and if we can try to put ourselves in a position where we can actually make a difference to solve problems before they become crisis or before something bad happens or before criminal activities occur between parties or, God forbid, somebody or violence or any kind of crisis, we'd like that opportunity to try to resolve those disputes peacefully in a controlled environment prior to those things occurring.
So other than the experience of being a police officer and being called out on some of these neighbor disputes, again, which are very serious, what sort of training, who are the mediators and how do they get involved? What's their background?
I'll tell you, and the mediators are the backbone of what we do. And if we didn't have skilled mediators, we would not be able to be of service that we are. Our mediators are phenomenal. Now, in order to be a mediator, the state requires that you go through there are several different stages of mediation. There's a general civil mediation, which requires 40 hours of training. And then there's also a domestic mediation that can handle the issues like I explained to you with the family court and those type issues. That's a 48-hour training. And then there's advanced trainings that are offered that allow, because sometimes, some of these cases can be extremely complicated. If you get into certain probate type issues or you get into certain other issues that are extremely complicated, you need to have mediators that have the aptitude and ability to be able to mediate these complicated cases. So we are always, always looking to add to our mediation pool of mediators. Now, understand that they are a volunteer mediation. We are based on a volunteer basis. And we are actually, my plan is to go on a very large recruiting of mediators and I'm obviously partial to police officers because they do it on a daily basis, but to get, if they're willing to come out and go through the training and become volunteer mediators for the center. But I also look at a lot of the people already involved in the legal system, attorneys. There are a lot of attorneys that are already also certified as mediators. And I know that a lot of the large firms require their attorneys to participate in some pro bono efforts, and which is a wonderful thing, because what mediation will bring is the availability to sometimes those who don't have the funds, who don't have the ability to be able to to pay for a litigation or pay for an attorney or pay for some of these things that, that are involved. And it, we can go as complicated as you, as a case can be, or we can go as simple as you're the dog barking all the time. And we mediate small claims cases. We mediate landlord-tenant cases. Anything where we can find resolution that is, that'll keep the parties involved from having to go to that next step of litigation, we're willing to do.
David Robinson is joining us on the telephone. He is interim executive director of the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center, housed here in the Dearborn Atrium on Mason Street in Dearborn. And we are talking about opportunities available for those interested in getting some support, some outside help to resolve something that is not going well in their own home, in their school environment, or anything beyond that. And I think David, you pointed out one of the ideas of creating some new opportunities for growth besides just dealing with the mission and vision that the organization currently has. So anytime we're sort of reinventing things, we want to keep that eye forward and keep moving forward. You've explained some of the more, I don't want to call them traditional, but maybe typical issues that might come up that would require somebody to get involved and get connected with the Dispute Resolution Center. But we are in such a time of trying to figure out how to handle the issue of mental health, mental illness. And I know there are lots of family members out there that are dealing with issues on a daily basis when it comes to a brother, a sibling, a child, a parent, something that is sort of falling into that category that there is very little support out there, at least that we know of, that they know of, the traditional kind of support, a place to have somebody go to kind of get their head together, whatever the case. Is the organization looking at mental health intervention? And if so, what's that process looking like right now?
Well, and I'll tell you, as we move forward, I'm actually glad you brought this up because this is something I feel pretty passionate about because, I was lucky enough under Chief Haddad and the Dearborn Police Department and Mayor O'Reilly, we were able to put together a pretty nationally recognized non-criminal mental health intervention model. And the whole purpose of that model was in order to try to, because if you thought about it, police officers, they're out there and they're a perfect conduit of information. They're a perfect conduit of, they're out there 24/7. They deal with these issues as they come up. And before, if we come across somebody who happens to be suffering from some form of social or mental fitness or mental illness, it was a perfect fit for us to try to find help before they would ever rise to the level of a traditional needing the police to be involved. That's why it was called a non-criminal intervention model. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, in our phases as a mediation, and my kind of thought process as we grow through these things, obviously it is, doing what we do, we deal with a lot of the different other service agencies within the county and within the state. And when it comes to social services, et cetera, and people who offer assistance with mental health and all of those things. And absolutely, I would like to, and one of my goals over the next year is to develop some sort of a relationship process that goes through our mediation center that when we do encounter situations where somebody might fall into one of those categories of mental illness or mental fitness, I like to call it, type situation, that we have a common and easy and readily available referral service to in order to lead these people to some solutions to treat these things before, because there is going to be times that when we are mediating a case, you're going to find that there are some sort of underlying issues that are greatly affecting either one or both parties involved in the mediation. And it would really be nice to partner with some of the other agencies that have the ability and aptitude in order to treat illnesses or to direct people to the right kind of services that are available. Because what I have found is there's a lot of services available that people simply don't know about. And to be a facilitator and in partnership with some of these agencies, that is also part of my growth plan. And I think that it would benefit so many people, because that's really what we're here for. Not much different than what my role was as a law enforcement officer when you think of the true sense of our job is service to the public. This isn't much different than that. We just provide a different type of service. And it is about servicing the people who need it in this county. And that's, you know, the role in mental health plays such a large role in today's society, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be a diagnosed, situation where somebody is diagnosed with a form of recognizable mental illness. It can be stress. It can be other things that people sometimes just don't know how to deal with on their own, or within their family unit, or within their work unit, or within the people who are involved in the situation. Sometimes, and being able to have an outside source to where people can come in and talk through their issues and try to figure out where they're at, because quite frankly, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a sociologist, and there are professionals out there and there are services out there that we'll be able to refer people to when we see that need, and that's really part of our growth plan.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. People that are being trained as mediators, whether the domestic, the regular mediator, sort of training level, then that advanced. You didn't mention a qualification of needing to have any type of counseling or social work experience, but obviously there are resources that will be made available to mediators potentially to identify when intervention of that nature might be important to recommend. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, that's absolutely correct. And to be quite honest with you, in order to be a mediator, now I know there are some recent State Court of Michigan has come out with some new guidelines, and there's some new laws about certain types of mediation that I have not even had the chance to familiarize myself with yet. But as it is right now, pretty much anybody who's willing to go through the training, it can be a mediator. And unfortunately, we do compete with, there are so many things that people can volunteer to do in our communities. There are so many different types of programs, and they're all looking for people willing to volunteer. But what I think we can offer is we offer some very state-of-the-art training, which for your listeners to know, that we're going to be making an announcement early in January about, or maybe late December, about a large training that we are going to put together in February in all of those areas. And I'd like to hold three in 2020, three different training sessions, so that people can go to these trainings and get their certifications. But what I can promise somebody who wishes to come and be a mediator, one of the internal gratification of being able to sit down and all of a sudden you have the two opposing parties, and the gratification you're going to get when you're able to find resolution in that issue, that you walk out with feeling like, well, I really accomplished something, because I was not only a peacemaker, a logic setter, a conversation facilitator, I was all these things that helped these two solve a major problem. And not that other volunteer work isn't as rewarding, but I think that people who do mediations find it very interesting. I think they find it rewarding. And we certainly do appreciate, and like I said, it can be anybody. You know, people who have the time to volunteer, I hope that they consider this as an option. And, you know, this is also, it's not only for people who happen to be retired and have nothing else to do. I mean, although we take those people and we certainly appreciate them and they're phenomenal with their life experiences mediators, but we like law students. We like all students who are in college, and if they're looking into going to law, or they're looking to go into criminal justice, or they're looking to go into social work, or they're looking to go into some of those things, this is a very excellent kind of training ground and taste of maybe what they're going to go into and dealing with people, customer service, that kind of thing, that this really is a very good thing for them to participate in.
Well, let's talk about the two areas that we've kind of set aside here for our interview today, David. And so we have the side where mediators are in demand and the right kind of person will absolutely make a huge difference on their community and those living and working in it. And it sounds like you speak from experience, and we know that to be the case. And then the other side is the people that might be seeking out some form of dispute resolution. So if you would share the contact info that one might utilize, let's start with somebody that is intrigued by what you're talking about with the opportunity to become a mediator, to be a part of this process of successful change and getting, you know, getting their community stronger. How do we go about getting on a list, or, you know, so we can be up for that training once that announcement comes out, or, to, you know, talking to you directly? How do we reach out in that way?
Excellent question. They are free to call us at area code 313-561. I got to check it here because I don't call it myself. 3500.
313-561-3500 or 3500. Yep. Yes. Yep. Thanks.
Yes. Yep. And they can call, and anybody there will be able to assist them and help set them up for their mediations and, or their interest, or answer their questions about training. That's our main number. They can also reach out by email. My email directly is drobinson@wcdrc.org, and I get emails all day long, so I'm not unfamiliar with checking them and responding, and I answer every single one of them. And what is important is to remember is that you know, we also have programs for those who are interested in having something mediated, or even to investigate having something mediated. Mm-hmm. The state court administrative offices has a pilot program, which we happen to be one of, and it's called MI Resolve, and it's an online mediation. So, and this is 100% free of charge at this point because it's a pilot process. That if somebody has a dispute, what they would do is they would obviously log into MI, like the, you know, the capital letters, and then Resolve. They can Google it and log in, and it would direct them right to our center, and they can request a mediation, and they would fill out some online information, and then the actual system will automatically invite the other person to be involved in a mediation. And if both parties agree, then we assign a mediator, and we actually, the mediation will occur online.
Wow.
through the format that is there, which actually I think has some very seriously good potential, because we know people have busy lives, and sometimes scheduling in order to do an actual mediation, getting two people at the same place at one time, and it can be difficult. And quite honestly, today's society, everybody does stuff on their phone. Everybody does something electronically, and I think the whole idea of this pilot is to see how effective this type of mediation will be. Now, this has been done in other areas of the country and have seen some success, but I think very certainly in like the issues of small claims or some simple neighbor disputes or some simple landlord-tenant type disputes, this would be a great format for people to be able to at least see. It doesn't cost anything to see if mediation could help their situation.
Wow, that's a fantastic idea.
And this, the mediation or dispute resolution process, is it binding on both parties when they agree to become a part of it?
And is it always free?
No, there is definitely a sliding scale on mediations, but it's geared towards us being able to provide services to everyone. Hmm. So it's a sliding scale, usually based on the complexity of the case.
Hmm.
And it is not, you know,
some are definitely more difficult than others. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of our cases, you know, we at least try to cover our administrative costs of either $25 or $35 per party in order to facilitate. This isn't for the MI Resolve now. That's totally free. But in most mediations, it's very minimal, and sometimes they are free. But it just all depends on, you know, we take into consideration complexity of the case, the financial capabilities of the parties that are involved, because we are a nonprofit organization. We're not out here to make money. We're out here to serve. And that's the whole purpose. And, you know, the whole idea of doing the mediations by this kind of a model is to really get these volunteers to be able to be involved. That's why we use a volunteer model, because we do want to keep the cost down. You know, I read a quote the other day that I thought was kind of funny. Some of my attorney friends didn't think so, but it said, an ounce of mediation is worth a pound of arbitration, which is worth a ton of litigation. You know, wow. So, you know, some attorneys may not like that, but it's true. If we can mitigate a problem before it becomes an issue, I think it's better for everyone.
And Ellen had the question about how binding is this form of dispute resolution.
Right. The binding is once they agree to mediation, that's still not binding. Up until the day of the mediation, and even through the mediation, until an actual contract is signed, it doesn't become binding. But once the contract between the two parties to agree to what they do, and if it's a court-related matter, it does become a court legally binding document.
But the goal is to get everyone on the same page, to put it in writing, and hopefully have the resolution of that conflict.
Exactly. Because that's what's nice about mediation. If you can resolve it that way, and if they have a binding agreement and, you know, one party doesn't follow through with what their agreement says and stuff, there is always still the option to take it and go back through the court system.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of like a precursor to maybe keep you from having to go to court. And as you pointed out earlier, it definitely helps the court system in so that they can spend time on cases that can't be resolved any other way, rather than having to sort through and mediate on their own these type of issues.
We are really so fascinated by this process and so happy that this opportunity exists for people that are in need of some dispute resolution, David, and you've answered all of our questions so well. Two last-minute quick things that popped into my head before we let you go, and we're wrapping up. But first question, again, you'd indicated that there could be sort of court-appointed mediation, and then there's the volunteer mediation. If someone is, as a part of the, a legal process required to do this, I suspect that will all be arranged for them. But if someone literally wants to start a dispute resolution inquiry, aside from the MI Resolve pilot program that's going on online, they don't have to get buy-in from the other party in order to do that, correct? That's something that would be done through your organization.
Right. That's what we would. If somebody contacts us and they want to try to mediate an issue, we will certainly meet with them or discuss it with them, and we will try to see if the other party is interested in going this route. And, you know, and usually when people look at the other alternatives, this is a very good system, and especially to initially try to resolve a dispute without it becoming very, costly for the individuals or the organizations. And the thing is they look at this, because if it doesn't work, if the mediation doesn't work, they still have that option. It doesn't negate any ability for them to continue to pursue this through the court system.
Got it. And then my second question was, for those that are interested in getting this going, same contact information that process?
Yes, like the court ordered, we actually get the paperwork right straight from the court, and then we make contact with the parties and arrange for the meeting, for the mediation, and all that, and it usually goes it's down to a pretty good science at this point. But anybody who wants to resolve something, they're like, even if it's, you know, there's a roommate issue in the college dorm, or there's issues like this, and they just can't seem to get it together. Just if one of the parties reaches out to us, we will help them in any way that we possibly can to try to get them together with the party that they're having the dispute with and try to resolve the situation for everybody involved.
David Robinson, congratulations on your new role with the Wayne County Dispute Resolution Center. For those who want to learn more about the center and volunteer mediation, you can visit wcdrc.org. That's WCDRD.org. And you can also call if you're interested in attending training sessions, 313-561-3500. So great to have you here on the WHFR Journal.
Yes, thanks, David. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, guys. Very good questions, and I appreciate your support of us.
Absolutely. Continued success as well, and we look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much.
I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. We'll be back with more on today's edition of the WHFR Journal. Do stay tuned.
Attention Henry Ford students. The college's winter 2020 semester is fast approaching. Here are some important dates to remember. October 14th, winter 2020 schedule becomes available in the HFC self-service. October 28th, priority registration begins. October 14th, open registration for all students begins. December 23rd, HFC closes for end-of-the-year holidays. January 13th, classes begin. And January 19th is the last day of late registration. Please visit hfcc.edu for more information.
This is the WHFR Journal. Thank you for being here. Such an important topic as it relates to the season of giving. We are in the November sort of festive holiday, want to be kind to each other and reach out and give and so on. And that's a good thing. And that's being channeled here at Henry Ford College. It has been actually for some time, and it's not specific to the month of November, but we're going to take advantage of this spirit of giving and this feeling of festivity and so on. And joining me in studio at this time is Mandy Earle. Mandy is the Student Activities Associate through Henry Ford College. And in addition, she has a very important role as it relates to our just fantastic food pantry here on campus. It's called the Hawk's Nest, and it has been going strong, flying high, as we say, for some time now. Welcome back to our studios, Mandy.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
Glad to have you here. We just are on the sort of the cusp of wrapping up a food drive. Tell us about that, and also not only specifically, but how the process of incorporating food drives into the, you know, everyday stocking of the pantry, how that actually really helps impact quantities and so on.
Yes. Yeah, so this fall semester, we're actually up in the number of students that are visiting the pantry. So we've been in great need of getting donations. So we've been holding a few more food drives. And fortunately, our HFC community and the community surrounding us here in Dearborn have been very supportive in helping us out. We have about almost 200 students using it this fall, which is up over 50 students from last fall. So word is out there. More students are needing to use it. So we do need to do more food drives because we are completely run on donations. So it's very essential for us to do those drives. The Hawk's Nest just held one for 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks. We had about 300 pounds of food collected and almost 1,000 personal care items that were collected.
Wow.
So that was very helpful. We also collect monetary donations. So we have a lot of people that will donate money, and then we use that to go out and go shopping to gather the items that we need as well.
I see. How long has the Hawk's Nest officially been going here?
It opened in January of 2016.
Wow.
Yeah.
That long already.
Yes.
Huh? Boy,
yeah.
I remember when it just started. And once it was instituted here on our campus, so many of us that have been here for years and years were just like blown away. It's like, why didn't somebody think of this sooner? Or maybe they did and it just wasn't able to, you know, kind of get off the ground. But it certainly is very much so and active in supporting our students. Tell me, you mentioned community people contributing as well as those on campus.
Yep.
What, when we reach out for food drives, who do you reach out to? Is it primarily employees of the college? Is it other students? And is it partners in the community, or probably all of the above?
Yep. So when we do our food drives, they're mainly on campus. So we'll advertise it on campus, and we get a lot of support from our faculty and staff, and then also our students.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're fortunate that a lot of our faculty and staff also are part of different groups in the community, and they will share the information with their groups, and we get a lot of donations through that. We just received a very generous donation from the Exchange Club of Dearborn. So they gave us a very generous donation that's going to help us out. The staff council is doing a drive currently through the end of November to collect food for the pantry. So we're very thankful for their support. They started doing that with us last year, and they continued again this year. So we're very grateful for that. But just different groups in the community, we received some turkey vouchers from the Leaders Advancing and Helping Communities, which is an organization in Dearborn. They donated 10 turkey vouchers that we did a drawing and gave them out to the students. So that's really helpful as well.
Oh, how nice. When students are coming for support for whether it's food support or, as you indicated, personal care items, we're very big for this particular drive. What kind of students are you seeing? Is there a trend? Is there a demographic, an age range, of socioeconomic, where people are living? I mean, what do you see most of in terms of those that are in need at this particular time?
Yep. So we do see, we do collect a little bit of demographic information. We are seeing a lot of students that are from the Detroit area, and a lot of them are kind of in the traditional college range age, so like in the early 20s. But we also get students that are older, non-traditional students, and kind of from all over the surrounding areas. A lot of them may just be by themselves on their own for the first time, and then also some of them have families that they're also trying to support. So either their siblings or they have children that they're supporting as well.
Mm-hmm. I know that they always say any one of us is certain number of steps away from being in a situation where you go from not needing to having a need. And that's why certainly as a faculty member, and we try to encourage all of our faculty, full-time and adjunct, to just inform our students that this is available on campus, because even though they might need it at any particular semester, you never know. The next semester there could be a need, could be a change, a job change, lifestyle change, whatever. Do you find a lot of first-timers coming in? And in an increase of 50 students, that means 50 more than have ever come before did this time around. So
yeah,
that's a good thing that they found you.
Yep.
But what any particular circumstance that might have led to that increase in your mind?
In the past couple of years, we've been really trying to get the word out about the pantry. So coming on the radio station helps. Just partnering with different faculty on campus and them talking about it in their class. We have heard from more students saying that they're instructors are telling them about it, which is great. Holding the food drives, having those flyers out there, we try to flyer and hand. We've been handing out granola bars with a flyer attached to it, letting the students know that the pantry is there if they need food at any time.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the specifics then. It's not easy for people to ask for help sometimes.
Yep.
It can be uncomfortable. It can be embarrassing. It can be very counter to the way maybe someone has been raised to think that, they might be in that situation. But literally and specifically, what does someone do? If we have a student listening right now that says, I'm going to have some trouble by the end of this month and I'm not going to be able to afford to take care of, some food issues with me and maybe even in a little bit of an extended family for a week or something. Mm-hmm. What do they do?
So I would encourage the instructors to recommend them to come to the pantry, but if at any chance they can walk them to the pantry or have them come with me and I will take them over there, sometimes that helps ease their feeling of not wanting to go over there, not wanting people to see them go over there. And a lot of times when they get referred over there, they don't always make it. It can be hard to find as well.
Where are you located exactly with
the pantry? We're in the ASCC, which is Building L on campus, and we're kind of in the front corner over by the UAW offices. And we specifically picked that location just to make it more discreet for students. So if they need to, they can come up the front, they can get their stuff and go right out the front door and no one really sees them. But, yeah, if they can walk them over there, it helps. When the student comes for the first time, they need to have a copy of their current schedule and then a copy of their student ID with them, and that's all they need.
Okay, so student ID and current schedule.
Yeah.
If they physically have their own schedule and their ID card, can somebody help them make a copy, or do they need to go get that done in advance?
So when they come over, they just need to show it to us. So actually need a copy of it. And they can pull it up on their phone. They can pull it up on our computer if they want to
fantastic.
As well.
Oh, yep. Fantastic. Okay. So they don't need to go do any preliminary work beyond that.
No.
Okay. Because I'm thinking anything that's going to stop somebody could very well stop them in their tracks at that point. So then they come during the hours that the pantry is open. And then what happens when they get there and they've shown their ID, they've validated that they are a student here? What happens next?
So we have three great student workers over there, and they will walk them through the process, and they will kind of give them a little tour of the pantry. We have shopping lists that will help guide them throughout their shopping experience. We do have to limit the number of items to make sure that we're able to provide for as many students as possible. So they'll talk them through that and how that's set up. And then they go through, they shop like they're at a grocery store, they bring it back up, and we bag it up for them. They're allowed to come by once a week.
Once a week.
Yep.
And roughly, when you talk about sort of the need to limit, and that makes perfect sense, but people can potentially be coming out with a full bag of groceries, full bag of personal care support.
Yep. So you can get about like a reusable bag, probably a full bag of that, or a couple of like plastic grocery type bags.
I see.
Full of food.
Okay.
Yep.
And once a week,
once
being
a week.
Able to do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic. Some of us on campus have donated reusable grocery bags, you know, shopping
yep.
bags as well, which is kind of nice because it's a little easier to carry maybe.
Yes,
it doesn't
yep.
look necessarily like a grocery bag. But from the community, from those that are listening outside of our campus area, if somebody has some extra resources, what would be the number one, two, and three things, literally, aside from cash donations, which I'm sure are always appreciated,
yep.
that the pantry could use?
I would say probably now that we're heading into like the winter months, some of the like soups and chilies and raviolis are big. Cause that's easy for the students, like if they're on campus, for them to heat up on campus. Pastas always need it, and vegetables. Canned vegetables.
So cans and some of like those little microwavable kind of
yeah.
things, like the pastas and things they can put in a microwave here
yeah.
on campus.
Yeah, the individual things the students really like. So like the individual mac and cheeses, like the individual fruit cups, because a lot of times they'll be on campus and they need to be able to eat something here. So those are easy for them just to open up. They don't need a can opener or anything like that for most of them.
Good. Yeah, that makes sense. And then the idea of not buying big quantity, you know, you can buy a lot of something to contribute, but just not physical, like a 5-pound bag of, you know, mashed potatoes or something
yes.
crazy like that.
Because then someone's going to get a 5-pound bag
yeah,
of mashed
right.
one person.
And have
yeah.
to carry that around.
Yep.
No, I get it. Well, good. That makes perfect sense. Are you collecting things like outerwear or, you know, gloves and socks and stuff like that, or is that really not necessarily what this is all about?
We don't really ask for a lot of that stuff. We always, if we get hats, gloves, scarves, that kind of stuff, we'll put it out for the students to take, definitely. But we don't have a lot of space to house a lot of that type of stuff. So, and there is different regulations for if you have clothing with food, mm-hmm. food and stuff like that. So it's just easier for us if we just kind of stick to the food and the personal care items. And then when we get some of those other items, we definitely will put them out.
Okay. What has been some of the most rewarding aspects of, for you personally, working with this pantry? Because you're bopping around all over campus all the time, I know, focusing on this. And it's got to feel pretty good to see the difference that you're making and just to know that that it's working. Up 50 people is in some ways a victory. In other ways, it's unfortunate that
yeah.
that need is there. But knowing that if it means that more students that had the need to begin with are now finding the pantry and utilizing it as it's intended, that's a good thing.
Yeah. It is very rewarding. I know a lot of students have shared with us just their stories and their struggles, and then to see them later in the semester or maybe a couple semester later just come back and just say, you know, this is where I'm at. I'm doing really good success. I'm very successful in academics and, you know, just really thriving right now, and you guys helped me out in a time of need. So we've gotten a lot of those stories. So it's really nice to know that we were able to provide that service that was able to help them be successful while they're here.
Yeah. In some cases, maybe just like that bridge during that
yeah.
particular time. And we certainly know that many students in particular, they're here to learn, they're here to thrive. And when there are things holding them back,
yeah.
like hunger, like literal hunger,
yeah.
most of us probably don't quite know what that extent feels like. But certainly seeing students that are struggling academically, sometimes it is because they're just not
yeah.
in a position to be thinking clearly because they haven't eaten in a day or two
yeah.
or whatever the case. So, yeah, that's so important. And then finally, Mandy, specifically, if somebody wants to learn more about the Hawk's Nest, but also a student that might literally want to show up, I know hours are a little bit limited during
yep.
the daytime, but when can we find you? And if somebody needs some support outside of those hours, can something be made? Can we arrange something potentially?
Yeah. So the Hawk's Nest is open Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then also on Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. I am here during the week, Monday through Friday, from about 8:30 to 5 o'clock. Students can always reach out to me if they have a need outside of those hours, and we can set up a day and time that I'd be able to meet with them, and I can certainly take them over there to help them get those resources if they're not able to make it in. They can reach me at my email at mleal1@hfcc.edu, or they can call me in my office at 313-317-1756.
Great. I'm going to do that one more time. 313-317-1756. And the email address is mlearl, E-A-R-L, @hfcc.edu.
Correct.
We are a culture of student success here. That is our mission statement in a nutshell at Henry Ford College, and certainly the Hawk's Nest is supporting that effort of student success in a different yet equally as important, in some ways more important, way than what students are learning in the classroom. In addition, I think the opportunity to perhaps down the road learn from, appreciate, and be able to maybe decide to give back to one's community.
Exactly.
After having gone through the other side of the spectrum. I'm sure that must feel really good for students to, when you get those success stories and like, look, I'm doing good, and and now maybe I want to do something to help other people.
Yep. And we have had a number of students who were using the pantry that have come back and actually donated some food as well. So,
oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, that's great to see.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Again, it's called the Hawk's Nest, and it's available for Henry Ford College students, current students, student ID, and simply the showing a copy of their student schedule while they are in classes during a particular semester. We just want to make sure that they're a valid student. 10 to 5 Monday through Thursday, 10 to 1 on Fridays, and the Hawk's Nest is on the main floor of the administration building, Building L, right here on our campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road. Mandy, we thank you for your commitment to our students. Thank you for your time. And is there anything that you'd like to add that we haven't hit this time around as it relates to support for the Hawk's Nest or anything about it specifically?
I just like to thank you, Susan, for having us on. You've done this a number of times for us. That helps us to get the word out there as well to the students and also those who donate. And definitely just to say a big thank you to the college, the faculty and staff here in our community, because we would not be able to exist without their support. And they've been very generous throughout the years to us. So we appreciate it.
Well, you're absolutely welcome. It is our pleasure entirely. We hope to one day not have a need for something like a Hawk's Nest, but we suspect that won't be the case. So in the interim, we're going to keep it thriving and keep great things happening for students in need. Thank you for your time today and your commitment to our students, Mandy.
Thank you, Susan.
Certainly. This is Mandy Earle, Student Activities Associate here at Henry Ford College. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Please stay with us.
Do you like the sound of a jazzy big band? How about something operatic? Maybe something lighthearted.
Today, I'm feeling the way I shouldn't. I'm feeling too good today.
Hear them all on Big Band Broadway and Beyond. I'm Joe, your host, every Friday from 10 a.m. till noon on WHFR 89.3.
I'm feeling too good today. I got the feeling too good today blues.
Henry Ford College is a smoke-free campus. Henry Ford College supports and is committed to wellness and a healthy environment. No person shall smoke, chew, or use tobacco, tobacco products, vaping, or smoking simulation products on campus, with the exception of use in private vehicles. Use of recreational marijuana, however, is strictly prohibited anywhere on campus. The HFC smoke-free policy applies to all faculty, staff, students, vendors, contractors, and visitors to our campus. For more information on the HFC smoke-free policy, visit policies.hfcc.edu.
We're going to wrap up this week's edition of the WHFR Journal with letting you know about a few events taking place here on the HFC campus in the near future, and very near future in the case of one of them, and that is that tonight at 8 p.m. is the premiere performance of the Henry Ford College Theater Arts production of Mary Poppins, the Broadway musical. The play is directed by Mary Bremer Beer, and it's presented through a special arrangement with Musical Theater International. Performances tonight at 8 o'clock, tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 p.m., and then next Saturday at 8 p.m., that's the 23rd, and the 24th, which is next Sunday at 2 p.m., again, a matinee performance. Tickets available, $12 for adults, seniors, HFC faculty and students, $10, or children 5 to 12 years old, $5. To purchase tickets, you can visit hfcc.edu/campus-life/theater, or for more information on the performance, contact call 586-983-9484. Another thing coming up we want to let you know about is that 5101, the student-run restaurant here at HFC, will hold its fall bake sale on Tuesday, November 26th and Wednesday, the 27th, day before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve. That's going to be in the Student and Culinary Arts Center, Building M, here on the main campus. It takes place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tuesday, the 26th, 10 to 2 on Wednesday, and 5 to 7 that evening when the restaurant will be open. Pre-orders are available. You can visit the 5101 website, hfcc.edu/5101/bake-sale/form, or just Google 5101 restaurant Henry Ford College, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it from there. All sorts of great things available there, including cheesecakes, apple pies, mincemeat pies, pecan pies, pumpkin pies, sweet potato pies, and more. So, once again, that's the 5101 bake sale taking place November 26th and 27th here on campus. And, of course, tonight, starting tonight, Mary Poppins, the Broadway musical, performing here at the Henry Ford College campus. That'll be in Building F in the big theater there. I'm Alan Mazurek. Thanks so much for being with Susan McGraw and I today on the WHFR Journal. We hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we look forward to having you back here with us next week.
Hey, come join me, DJ Fun Monkey, at my new time slot, noon to 2 on Mondays, to listen to the best alternative rock, indie, and various other music genres, from Taking Back Sunday to times like these, where silence beats every to Great Grandpa. That's noon to 2 on Mondays, and listen in between the music just to find out what's going on with movies, video games, and other media as well. It's locked up like a trophy,
forgetting all the things. Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.